Hey, fannies, it's Andrew, half of Hey Kids Comics, the show that you are listening to on the Jedi Cold Network. And I'm not here to present a podcast to you. I'm here to actually talk to you a little bit about an upcoming event. And to join me, Kelly Long, guest of the show, and kind of big kahuna for this thing. So, Kelly, what are we talking about?
Hey Andy, thanks so much. So, what is coming up in the Boonshoff Museum of Discovery in Dayton, Ohio on June 21st and 22nd? We're going to have a geek prom and a geek fest. So, the geek prom section is on Friday night. We're going to have dancing, we're going to have live music. It's 21 and up, and it's $20 to get in. You get a drink, and you get some snacks, and you get to support the museum. That is the fundraiser section of Geek Fest. Geek Fest is the all-inclusive day. It's going to be from 10 to 4. We're going to have kids costume contests, the planets of Star Wars and the planetarium, the planets of Star Trek. We're going to have a new space exhibit that is debuting that weekend of Geek Fest that I can't really talk about because it's super secret, and Klingons and way more.
Super excited about those Klingons, by the way, ladies and
I
gentlemen. Super excited.
Super.
And where do people buy tickets for this bad boy?
To catch tickets for the event, you have to go to www.boonshoftmuseum.org. You can purchase tickets for the event. You can purchase raffle tickets. And if you want to feel like you may, if you feel like you need to make a donation to the museum, you can also do that there too. We are a nonprofit, so this raises money to help feed the animals in our accredited zoo, to keep all of our natural history collections intact, and to be a service to the community.
Also, you get all of that and you get to feel good about yourself. That's amazing. And I'm going to be there hosting costume contests and doing trivia and just generally being a jackanape about town. What's not to
You can't
love?
miss it.
You can't miss it. Come down to Crazy Andy's. Get some pizza. See a Klingon. Don't touch a sloth. At the Boonshoff Museum. June 21st and 22nd. Buy the tickets on the website that I can't remember the.
www.boonshoffmuseum.org.
That's the one, ladies and gentlemen. So now we're going to throw you back to your regularly scheduled programming, but don't forget June 21st and 22nd. June 21st and 22nd. June 21st and 22nd for Geek Fest. Going to Geek Fest because it's the best they got Klingon. So bring on the fun. I added another line to the song. High atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent. Your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you a little peek behind the curtain right up front. This is Andrew. I'm about to do something that I'm really embarrassed. The reason for that will become really evident really quickly. So just keep that in mind as I take this back to one and start the show proper. All right, here we go. What's up, fannies? This is Hey Kids Comics. I am Andrew Farmer, as always, and with me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
I am here with my fannies and my manny's.
I feel bad, man. That doesn't feel right considering our guest tonight.
Well, I know, but we got to do it now. It's become a tradition. And it's okay because our guest went to A&M, which is steeped in tradition.
That's true. Who is our
So,
guest tonight?
our guest today, we are very honored because this is the only one of my shows that this guest has not been a guest on up to this point. None other than my dad, Don Houston. Welcome.
Welcome to you.
I am
joining us
thrilled.
from down in Spring, Texas today, and you have been on both of my live streaming shows. You were on the Rancor Pit Live doing a father-son Luke, I am your father reenactment, which was brilliant. And you have been on Isle of Toys talking about the kind of toys that were around when you
Oh,
were a
yeah.
kid. And it's, you know, it's almost like that list of toys Colonel Gentleman wishes he had when he was a lad, but they hadn't been invented yet.
If nothing else, you're a good sport. I'll give you that.
Yes.
For dealing with this. You're,
well,
you're the patriarch, yeah, of the Jedi Cole universe, ultimately.
You bet.
Well, he did raise three boys, so he survived that. you have to have some kind of good humor.
So tonight...
Have to have a good...
Go ahead. I want to hear the joke.
You have to have a good sense of humor.
Yes, you do.
To raise three boys.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know. I've done this for, what, 8 years, 9 years, and I don't know how you did it for that long. I'll tell you what.
That just happened.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, that the first time I ever knew that they did a little recording on a cassette, they did a series of burps and farts.
Well, we haven't ventured that far from that, I'll have you know.
Yeah, it was only a smidgen away.
Do what you love, well, and you never work a day in your life. That's what I said.
Yeah, their first radio program that they recorded,
oh God,
when they were,
yes,
preteen, was Booger News Knows.
I want this to be the entire show.
I want to point out, this is the third time in my podcasting career that Booger News Knows has been invoked, and every single time it's when Dad is on one of my shows.
Yes, I want it. This is the show now. Is your, yeah, dad throwing you under the bus for everything you did as a kid?
That's right.
I want that show. But unfortunately, we can't do that show.
No, we can't. But we're going to do a show about something that was very much a part of Dad's childhood, and that is none other than the original Captain Marvel from Wiz Comics and later Captain Marvel or Shazam.
Right. That had to be in the early 40s. Maybe as early as 39, but I'm thinking it's 40 or 41.
In fact, you're not far off the mark. Wiz Comics number 2 premiered Captain Marvel in February 1940.
Yep, that makes sense. Because my cousin Larry Lumpkin was, he and I hung out a lot together because he was still living in Oak Cliff at that time. And then he left in 45 to go to Houston with an aunt. So it was in the early 40s. And
so we're going to talk
about, yeah,
and we're going to talk a lot about your experience, because we've done a whole show on Captain Marvel in the past, but we've never had the opportunity to talk to somebody who was reading them when they were new. And of course, we're also, yeah, here because this is the fourth chapter of our story arc. What did we just see? This is Thunderstruck, and we're going to talk about Shazam, which
right,
was just such a fun movie. And I had the opportunity, was down in Spring last weekend, and got, or weekend before last, and got to go take Dad to go see Shazam in the theater. And we had to school the bartender at the AMC theater about the Captain Marvel with nearly 30 years on the Captain Marvel he thought
That's
we were
right.
talking about.
That's right.
was it the confusion?
Well,
he
was definitely Captain Marvel in the 40s.
Absolutely he was.
Did you?
But before
you
we jump
that
into that.
Do you remember when that changed? Or when it became kind of, were you still in it when it was... any kind of cross? Was anybody calling him Shazam back then? Or was that...
Well, that's what he had to say to make himself indestructible, was Shazam.
Yeah, interesting enough, when DC brought the character into their own fold,
right,
because it was originally from Fawcett Publications in the 40s, in 1974, they made a run at bringing him back. And the cover... read, the unwieldy cover in 1974 read, with one magic word, Shazam, the original Captain Marvel. Because by then, the character lay fallow for so many years that Marvel Comics came in and made their own damn version.
Right.
Their own Captain Marvel, and they said, oh no. Mm-hmm. But before we really get into this, I need to just do a little something that I wrote up for this very episode. this very issue. And as you know, I'm silly for tenuous connections.
That's your and other podcast, is silly that, for that tenuous connections.
And this one certainly fits the bill. If you've seen the movie, and if you haven't, this is going to be spoiler rich, so you might want to go see it first. One of the first things that struck me was, you know, Shazam, or Captain Marvel, was the hero of Fawcett City, because Fawcett Publications were that self-aggrandizing.
Sure.
But this movie takes place in the Liberty Town, as Huey Lewis calls it, in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, home of Tom Hanks. So, I had to make this Philadelphia connection that is painfully tenuous. So, if I could get a little bit of Fresh Prince backbeat here.
Do you want me to provide you a Fresh Prince
backbeat?
If you could.
You have you're the one who has a musical background.
I'll just do the theme song to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, if you're ready.
That's actually perfect.
All right, are you ready?
Here we go.
All right, this is going to be real bad.
I know, so is this.
Oh, great. About...
This is the story of how my life got a jolt through the magic of a wizard's lightning bolt. So sit down and I'll tell you, sit right down and I'll tell you right quick about a hero with 30 years on that Danvers chick. I was born in Philadelphia, and that's the truth. In the foster care system, I spent most of my youth. Kept running away because I preferred on my own, but I wound up finding family in an amazing group home. Then a segment took me to a cave, which I thought was quite odd. Soon some crazy old wizard gave me the power of a god. I tell you my name, my real name, but Marvel said, damn, because we got a flick on first, you have to go by Shazam. So I started learning about my new friend Fred, wearing a costume combining white, gold, and red. Found out the hard way heroes don't always score wins against a nutty professor with an eye full of sins. I stopped goofing around with my incredible power, which I shared with my family in our finest hour. Savannah got put away, and that really rocks, until he teams up with a worm sporting a high-tech voice box.
That was brilliant.
Mic drop.
That very was good.
That
very
was
from, good.
That was
very
really good. Drop. That was really, really, really good. First of all, that was really, really good, and I'm kind of shocked. I'm going to put that on the table. Second of all, what did he have a voice box, or was it? Because isn't in the comics? Isn't he telepathic, Mr. Mind?
In the comics, the original Mr. Mind was a cartoony ass looking caterpillar.
Yes, yes.
With one of those like church archway wooden radios around his neck.
Okay.
In the modern comics, what they did was take his giant cartoon eyes and make them that kind of camouflage element that occurs in nature that look like big-ass eyes to ward off predators.
Right.
And they gave him, in the comic, he actually has like a little bitty voice box thing going on, so he can do little tiny voice things and tell people what for.
Okay. So I've got to come off the top, and I'm wondering if we've got any insight to this, because I don't think... We talked about this, Cole. So I'm really curious to know if we can double back on this. It's a little research that I did into Shazam, and this is real, okay?
Okay.
The Wizard Shazam didn't start as the Wizard Shazam. The Wizard Shazam's name, and this is ridiculous, and so if I can get some verification at some level, was Shazamo.
Shazamo?
Yes. And the O was for Ogar, who was the god of magic. So the
Indeed.
Wizard Shazam's name was Shazamo, so Shazam had to say Shazamo to get his powers, but he eventually kicked Ogar out because Ogar was bad. Okay, he was a bad guy.
Okay.
And promptly and kicked him out by changing it the most passive aggressive way ever, which is to change his name, his magic name to, I'm just going to call myself Shazam now. You're dead to me. But yeah, apparently that's a real life thing that was I was shocked. I was floored that was true. Has anybody
Shazam.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
On the winner.
It was
a wild
boy
was named Batson, wasn't he?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Billy Batson.
Billy Batson. I remember that, but I don't remember the wizard.
Well, you might have missed that.
Yeah, I was 6, 7, 8 years old then.
And you might have missed the issue that he appeared in.
Well, I didn't have much money to spend. My cousin and I were lucky to have a nickel or a dime, whatever it cost at that time.
You needed a dime back then, so you were blowing some serious geld.
It was 39.
I think everybody seemed good, except Candy Bars. But yeah, most lead soldiers I bought were dime or more, and comics were dime.
Yeah, apparently it was 39. So it was 39 that came out, had his fall. But I thought that was ridiculous in the most Shazam way, that Shazam was Shazamo and he was Ogar, the world's mightiest immortal, which I thought
was
hilarious.
That's kind of dinky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It is 100% correct. So what did we think of the movie?
Oh, it was wonderful. I thought commented to Cole about it took so long to finally get him to be Shazam, be Captain Marvel. They told too much about his background, I thought.
Yeah, Dad was anxious to get to his favorite hero growing up, and all this character development was getting on his nerves.
Well, it's kind of like talking about Superman, where he came from and his family and so forth, and how he got to the world, and anyway.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
The thing I remember, and my memory's not super for exact thing, was that when they needed his strength and so forth, all he had to do was say Shazam, and he was
correct.
Locked and loaded. Yeah, he was locked and loaded.
Locked and loaded, yeah. Well, in fact...
And that's what intrigued me as a child, you know. Because before then, we were used to Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
Was the other, and we'd see that in a movie, you know, a serial or what have you. Dr. Zarkov and whatever, you know.
Dale Arden.
Yeah, Dale Arden. And then they replayed those. I don't remember when they replayed them on television. But it must have been. I had a brother who was 9 years younger than me, and it seemed like it was when he was a kid that they replayed the Buck Rogers. That would have been in the 40s and early 50s.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Captain Marvel himself had a serial at one point.
Could have been. See, we go to the movies on Saturday, and they'd have a double feature, and with a serial in between, and they would cut it off at the most crucial time, and you had to come back the next second. The next Saturday, they had you locked, you know, in the thing.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Dad.
Come back the next Saturday. Yeah.
There was a time.
The other one was,
Oh, sorry. I just want to tell you real quick. There was a time when Steve McCauley and I went to go see the movie Something Wicked This Way Comes, just so we could see the Empire Strikes Back trailer.
So
I know how you felt.
Yeah. Well, we knew that they were going to do another, either Buck Rogers or. Sergeant Preston the Yukon or something like that serial, you know, and it would last for a couple of months, you know, and it got you coming to the Saturday movie.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, in fact,
but it only cost.
I bet it cost nickel.
Nickel or dime at the most, you know, and popcorn was a nickel, and a streetcar was a 4 cents, I think, or what have you.
Well, let's face it, Dad. Everything was a nickel back then.
That's right. Had lots of nickels.
Oh my God!
They didn't give me a set amount. I just, when there's something I really wanted to do, well, I I asked for the money because I knew we didn't have a whole lot.
Did they just give you a
kids nowadays? Don't, I grew up during the Second World War, and you know, the three of us in the family at that time, we had our pint jar of sugar in the cabinet, and that was had to last you all month, you know, and everything was rationed, and my dad was too old to go into the service, so he was a Pullman conductor, and he was gone moving troops all around the country, so and of course there was no television, it was radio, and radio to me gave you a lot of ability to imagine what was going on.
Oh, absolutely.
And this is off the subject, but we had Jack Armstrong and Captain Midnight and
Pappy O'Donnell Flower
like
Hour.
I remember that all they had the soap operas started back then.
Oh yeah.
And you know why they were called the soap operas? Because they were all the advertisers were soap companies.
Absolutely.
Either Rinso or what have you.
I miss Rinso.
But yeah. But anyway, the guiding light.
Well, you know that I did check. There was a Captain Marvel serial in 1941 that was 12 chapters.
Okay, and they showed that at the movies.
Yeah,
and you got them all if you went.
That's right.
If you went all 12 Saturdays, you got to see the whole thing, and
roll of a half of nickels, you were set.
Right. And then we had Sergeant Preston of the Yukon, and you know, on King, on you Huskies. And they have a Sergeant Preston on TV now. You can see late at night. It's not as good as I remember it being in the movie.
Well, how do you feel about the kind of modernized look of Captain Marvel in the Shazam movie?
Well, the thing about it is I remember, and that really tests my memory, he looks just the same as he did in the comic strip.
Yeah, they really have not changed him much.
Yeah, I don't remember him being kind of off the chart as being kind of casual at times. And being kind of clumsy, falling on his backside or what have you, but he really looks the costume and all as I remember it in the comics.
I really like the look. My only issue with it is I love Zachary Levi. I just, and this is picky and petty, right? I know that, and I'm going to say it because it was a great movie. His head.
Right.
It's too small for that body.
That's right.
And it looks like a little Zachary Levi climbing out of a really big guy. And it was little off-putting.
He had a little too much shoulder pads.
Yeah, I agree. Yes.
So what you're saying, it was almost like Luther in Umbrella Academy.
It was a little Luthery. Yeah. It was a little Luthery.
Yeah. It was a good movie, though, and that. Of course, I really enjoyed Wonder Woman. That was very good. That was my other favorite comic, was Wonder Woman.
Well, you know, and how amazing is it to see your favorites realized on the big screen these days?
Well, and all with all those fancy computer-generated stuff that they do, I mean, that blows my mind because I'm not very computer literate. at 83 years old.
Well, I'm the unfrozen caveman of technology, and it's just insane to me what they can do nowadays. And especially with the realization of the seven deadly sins just colossal monsters.
Sure. Well, I can remember as a kid that The Wizard of Oz came out, and that was about as fairy tale like of anything we saw in the movies.
Oh,
back
yeah.
Then.
You guys had to be freaking out at those flying monkeys because they give me the chill
gems. It was something else, you know. Of course, Disney shows were I'm kind of sad they're coming back with Dumbo because I don't think they can do Dumbo from the 40s credit, you know. For
yeah, because they were just so good.
Snow White and Cinderella. Those were the movies I remember seeing in the late 40s and so forth. I had.
So, of course, go ahead.
No, I just, I had an aunt that worked for a church in Houston that I'd go visit quite often, and we'd go downtown on Mondays for her to do the bank deposit for the church, and she always took me to a movie.
Oh, nice.
And that's where I saw.
I bet you dressed up to go to downtown.
Oh, of course.
That literally was the period where if you went to a downtown metropolis, you got all gussied up.
Right.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know, it's...
it would be unseemly to go down
was,
the way
and
I go.
And downtown Houston and downtown Dallas were totally different, you know.
Well, they were often referred to as the Metropolis and Gotham City of Texas.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
No, they actually...
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they were the big cities, the two big cities, because San Antonio hadn't blossomed and Austin was still a lazy little capital town, you know. It wasn't until University of Texas and computer people came to Austin and Round Rock area that it really boomed. So it was kind of Silicon Valley of Texas now, but it was pretty. Matter of fact, as early as 1956, wasn't any such thing as a town lake. It was just the Colorado River running through town, and there was a lot of vacant land for overflow when the river flooded.
There you go.
So up into the town.
Speaking of the character of Captain Marvel, his power word, as it were, is Shazam, of course, which I think the wizard Shazam mentions that he comprises the strength of wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules,
right.
The stamina of Atlas,
oh, sure.
The power of Zeus, the speed or the something of Achilles, and the speed of Mercury. And I don't know how you guys felt, but it seemed like the wisdom of Solomon was sorely lacking for a lot of the movie.
Right. Yeah. Well,
he got himself in a lot of fixes.
Yes, he did. It took him a while to really grow into the being a responsible hero. As somebody who, you know, knew Captain Marvel, the hero, growing up, how do you feel about him jacking up ATM machines? He's like John Connor trying to finance his trip to the mall.
Sure. Well, I guess they have to modernize it a little bit to appeal to people nowadays because unless they talk to their grandfathers or grandmothers, they don't know about the comics that were available to us in the late 30s and through the 40s. So it's a different world now.
Absolutely.
Before television.
Exactly.
Well, I used to have all the stuff on television when it was black and white. They didn't have a whole lot of shows and all, so they would show the old serials, and so Buck Rogers serials would
kind of fill in all the blanks there.
Right. When you were a child, it was Mighty Mouse and a few of those things that got y'all's attention. they'd play the Mighty Mouse theme and y'all'd come from another room. Mighty Mouse. So, he was coming to save the day after all.
But I think you're onto a little something there, right? Like what we got from the Shazam movie was as close to a serial, you know, like a Batman, Superman, you know, from the original Reeves serials as any comic book movie I think we've gotten.
That's right. You kind of broke that up in six segments and played it as a serial real easily.
Then I'd have to come back down to Spring for 6 weeks in a row to take you to the Saturday movie.
Like you say, the reason they had those is you didn't have television. So that was we went to school Monday through Friday, and then we went to the Saturday movie, and we could get on the bus and go down two or three miles to where the movies were, and it didn't cost much of anything to either ride the bus or go to the movie, and we acted out sometimes. It's a wonder we didn't get kicked out of the theater in Dallas.
so you were going to some of these movies of the Texas then?
Oh, I went to the Texas and the Roseland and the Midway. When my brother, he was born in 45. So in the mid-40s, we'd go every Friday night to, I think it was the Midway down in East Jefferson, and they would have a double feature. Most of the time it was two Westerns, but they always had the a movie about the Durango Kid.
Of course.
And he was kind of like Superman, the mild-mannered guy in town, and something happened. He went off to the woods and came out in his black cowboy outfit and his white horse and black mask and so forth to solve the problem.
So there was always a kind of a superhero genre available in different media back then. And it's kind of nice to see that that's still with us to this day and just kind of they're breathing new life into it. And in this case, like Annie and I going into it, were familiar enough to know that there was a Captain Marvel or a Shazam family.
They threw it all
at you, didn't they?
Yeah, they crammed darn near the whole mythos. And then there were some wonderful little nods, like the Fawcett, the school itself was the Fawcett School, which apparently had every single grade under the same roof, for convenience sake, because it seemed like his entire foster family, who ran the gamut from pre-K to graduation.
That's the kind of school my mother went to. Was the Wheatland School, she went there.
I just feel like the Fawcett School must have had covered about 16 square acres.
Oh, sure. I came across an old book that was probably back in the 20s from Wheatland School, and it's a reading book. And it's got some really interesting stories, and it tells about things historically or people's lives and so forth. So it's very, very old.
So, Dad, from Shazam or from Captain Marvel comics, the old Wiz comics where he got his start, do you remember Dr. Savannah, the chief villain in this movie?
Yeah.
It was portrayed as...
I don't remember from the comic books.
Okay.
Kind of bad, you know.
In the comics, he was kind of the Lex Luthor to
Captain
Marvel.
Oh, yeah. He was Superman. He was the one that was. They finally got him at the end.
Yes,
I don't remember him having an evil magic eyeball, but, you know, whatever.
No, I didn't remember that.
I think that's all pretty new. But apparently it's Dr. Thaddeus Bodog Savannah.
Yep, Bodog.
Bodog.
I can't say I wouldn't become a supervillain.
Yeah, that was the first indication he was going to go bad. But in the comics, he was like a diminutive little guy in a lab coat.
And he still is. Glass.
Yeah.
He still is. Yeah. I was reading a Shazam comic last night, actually. And he is absolutely there. Matter of fact, it was a multiverse Shazam comic. So it was Shazams from all of the different Earths. There was a depiction probably of 30 different Dr. Savannahs, 30 different Bodogs, and and of all of the Bodogs, none of them resembled, you know, the dashing British good looks of a Mark Strong.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and you know, God bless him, Mark Strong is like 16-2. On bad guys to good guy roles.
Oh, poor guy. That poor guy. He's every bad guy except for, what was it, Kingsman? He's a good
Kingsman,
guy?
Yeah. If it wasn't for the two Kingsman movies, he'd never get a break.
Well, he's British and dashing, so.
That's true.
They're going to do that to him every time.
Plus, he got to be on that Jaguar commercial as a result.
Why do you pronounce Jajwa weird?
Jajwa.
Well, he could have got a part in a. One of the James Bond movies, couldn't he?
I think he did, didn't he? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
You're thinking of somebody else, but he's definitely. I think he. You know what? You know what's really messed up, and I mean this. I think he's too stereotypically British to be in a James Bond movie. Like, I think he's too over the top. Like, he would be too over the top as a James Bond villain to be in a James Bond movie. That's ridiculous.
Oh, the frightening thing is, I got curious. Bond Watch, is Mark Strong in James Bond 25?
I mean, he might be. I mean, he's in everything else right now. Why not?
How meta is that?
Him and the guy that played Shazam, who's in 3 or 8 movies, comic book movies right now, he's having a moment, that guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, Jaimin Hansu.
I wish I had kept at least one of those. Comics, but we might have got one a month, something like that, and we just read them and carry them around, you know, in our back pocket, and they got one.
Exactly. Yeah, how dare you use a comic book for its intended purpose?
That's right, you know. So I had one friend, Bobby Jack Miller, that had a box full of comics in his closet in his room. And I often wonder whatever happened to all those comics.
Oh, man.
So he kept them, you know.
Yeah, and that was the thing is they were like any other kind of consumable. That was the era where they were a magazine for kids. And just like Mom and Dad's magazines, they, you know, I think National Geographic was the only magazine anyone kept.
That's right.
Or the Playboys at the top of Dad's closet. What?
What? Your dad's
closet. I don't know how I knew they were at the top of your closet. I swear to God, I had no idea that they were there. For reals.
I mean, you had like a...
Well,
one of the
big shocks after I was an adult and all, and I got the Playboy magazines like every other red-blooded American, I guess, in the 60s and 70s or whatever.
Well, it was just
but
as was
going to spend the night with my PhD professor cousin at the University of Houston one time, and he had Playboy magazines in their bedroom.
Of course.
That really surprised me.
It's all for the articles, though.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, yes. They had wonderful articles.
but you know, that also speaks of that era. which would have been probably, what, about the 60s or something like that, or 50s?
Yeah. And, I think it started in the late 60s, didn't it?
Yeah. I think that that's also, that works very well in this, is because we're talking about, you know, generations that, Dad, you probably didn't know this, but the reason that Captain Marvel, that Fawcett's Captain Marvel disappeared, is that when Superman comes along, they were kind of rivals on the newsstand, and Captain Marvel comics were outselling Superman comics for about almost a decade.
Yeah,
and
I didn't realize
all
that.
All of a sudden, National Periodicals Publications gets all full of themselves and decides, oh, you've ripped off Superman.
Right.
Yeah.
You've had 9 years to do it better, and literally litigated Captain Marvel out of existence.
Well, see, I can't remember being a Superman fan. I don't. But I do remember being Captain Marvel fan, and that was really my Wonder Woman was the next, you know. So, but we started out with them when we were, well, of course, we looked at the pictures. But it was, as I remember, it was pretty well drawn. And
In fact,
you could tell it.
In that era, it would have probably been the art of one of the co-creator of the character, C.C. Beck, was the artist's name.
Okay, yeah.
And he had a wonderful sense of human anatomy and the human form, both in action and repose. In fact, in many ways, was one of the better artists of his day.
Right. Well, they were colorful. Had a lot of color to it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I remember, when Superman started back, they were kind of a dark comic, you know. Anyway, I just, that was the comic books, but we just didn't have a lot of money to buy stuff like that. And I during the war, I spent some of my dimes on lead soldiers.
Well, I mean, you probably needed to, because during the war, you probably didn't get much access to lead.
Right.
Well, I mean, we like, you know.
Yeah, that soldier is costing Uncle Sam 2 bullets, young man.
That's right. You know, and the thing about it, they were made before 41. But then after that, when they came out with things, it was kind of a cheap, rubbery.
It was that weird hard
truck. Yeah,
you brought one of the toys onto Isle of Toys, and it was the weirdest material. It was like something that came to Earth with Superman or something. It's like it did seem natural.
Yeah. Well, you know, the lead came from Indonesia, so I mean, when the Pacific War started, there was no getting anything out of.
Oh, okay.
Indonesia.
So that's
that's
interesting. And you'd think that something like lead being imported into the country would have been expensive. That stuff's heavy.
Right. And then, you know, there were things like rubber trees for, so they had to come up with synthetic rubber. Anyway, I don't know what kind of rubber they made those old trucks and stuff out of.
I think that was Kryptonian rubber.
I can remember their smell.
Definitely Kryptonian rubber. But Andy pointed something out about the Shazam movie that completely escaped me.
Yeah,
so
man.
You can talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, I can absolutely.
I think you know I'm talking about.
I can't stop thinking about it, and apparently can't stop talking about it either, was that, so you pointed out to me, and I had noticed it in there's a scene in the movie where they're in they're at the Rock of Eternity, and there's like the Hall of Doors, and they're trying to get home, and they're just opening all these random doors, and one of them they open has a nod at least to Sabacc, the crocodile man, the Egyptian crocodile man that was that ran with Teth Adam and his like Black Adam family.
He was actually part of Mr. Mind's Monster Society of Evil.
Which, by the way,
so was there a worm or something in that?
Yeah, Mr.
Yeah, Mind. that was Mr. Mind.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they'll go that far. They'll give us a nod to that. They will give us every member of the Shazam family short of one, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and and they'll they'll have us willingly suspend our disbelief almost completely and totally to the point where nobody notices a truck flying in the air and being dropped on the property of a school. But they will not give us Tawny the Talking Tiger. But what they will do is all scenes filled with tiger imagery. I swear to you, if I go back and watch this movie, every scene has something with a tiger in it. Whether it's a stuffed tiger, a drawing of a tiger, a backpack with a tiger, Fawcett's mascots were the tigers. There was the tiger at the carnival that he was trying to win. Everything was a tiger. Everything was a nod to Tawny the Talking Tiger. But they won't give it to us. Why not?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to expect us to believe this? Yeah. Like, you'll expect us to believe this.
Somebody will come up with a tiger toy or something.
But yeah, think of the toys they could have sold with Talking Tiger.
And I got that wrong. It was Sobek, not Sabek. Sabek was the evil Shazam whose name was made up of demon names.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
But yeah, Sobek was the crocodile god of the ancient Egyptians. Was also a crocodile man in the universe of Captain Marvel.
Comics are real interesting, and I probably never would have gotten back to being interested in them if Cole hadn't picked up on comic books and stuff like that.
He's got an insidious way about him. When it comes to that kind of thing. I did want to see, so we got not only every member of the Marvel family that we know, right? We got Freddy, we got Billy, we got Mary, we got, and then the rest of them were kind of a Flashpoint thing, Cole. All
right.
Where?
Yes. Yeah, they are.
But in Flashpoint, they all had to come together to make one Shazam. So that was the catch in Flashpoint, was that they all had to be together. They all had to say it.
Sure.
So my question for you is this in the movie, and I want to know if you guys had the same thought that I had, which was, so he shares his powers with everybody. First of all, yes, Uncle Marvel doesn't show up and just appear and, and become a character, which I'm still upset about, but they're making a sequel. Number two, did every one of those people that weren't, let's say, Mary, Freddy, and Billy, right? Shazam, Mary Marvel, and Freddie Freeman.
Sure.
Did everybody else just kind of get an aspect of the Captain Marvel power?
That's interesting. I'm not really sure, because they didn't really have a chance to, fully realize.
Fast. One guy was really strong. One could fly. They did that.
Well, the thing about it is, if memory serves, in the comics, if, say, Freddie and Mary were active.
Yes.
If they invoked the power of Shazam, across the three of them, the level of power was reduced by an order of three. So if all five are active, or all six rather, however many actually empowered, and I don't know if Hoppy the rabbit fell into this or not, how Hoppy the Super Bunny, but at one time there were, things got a little weird
in
the Marvel family, because you had Captain Marvel, you had Mary Marvel, you had Captain Marvel Jr.
Right.
You had Uncle Marvel, who was just a crazy old coot with no powers. You had Hoppy the Super Bunny. And then you had, I kid you not, Fat Marvel.
Sure.
Tall Marvel.
Yeah, right.
And one other. But I seem to remember somewhere.
Randy Newman was there. Oh.
Randy Newman, yes. Short People Marvel.
Short People Marvel.
No, there it was actually, I think, Short Marvel. Short, Tall, and Fat were the three Marvels, because apparently the Wizard Shazam was a complete ass. You shall be known as Fat Marvel. What, because I'm fat?
He was tired.
Leave him alone. He was tired.
Yeah, I was so zeroed in on Captain Marvel. I was, all he had to do to get his great powers was say Shazam, and everything flashed, and
yeah,
he came out with his uniform on. But you know, in that movie, what got me was that every once in a while he'd get knocked on his ass. You know, he'd have to get up and dust himself off.
Yeah, you're not half expecting him to meet his match, as it were.
No, no. You know, so anyway.
I did really like that he had to learn how to be a super. You know, that was a cool sequence where they were testing his powers, Unbreakable style. Right. They're like fire test, where they were like teleportation, and he's in the box, and he runs up and sets the box on fire.
But he didn't know that could happen.
Oh, and Dad, you know how we stayed for the after credit?
Right.
And saw Mr. Mind talking to Dr. Savannah. Apparently, that theater cut it off before the second after credit. So you and we went and saw it. It was very brief, but you see Captain Marvel or, you know, Shazam's face through this fishbowl.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, it's funny. Right.
And there's a goldfish swimming around, and he's like talking to it or singing to it or something, and he puts the fishbowl down, and Freddy's over there, and he's scratching out fish telepathy.
Right, because so the power.
Well, the joke was, it opens up for the next.
Well, the joke series. Was he was trying to see if he had the power of Aquaman.
Oh, my gosh.
If he could talk to fish like Aquaman. So
I remember Aquaman, but I was after my interest time and so forth. But
oh, absolutely.
The Green Hornet was one of my
famous,
you know, that I used to love on radio and in the movies. And
then
on television, too. I wish they bring some of those.
Yeah, Green Hornet was Bruce Lee's first American.
Yeah, Capo was Bruce Lee.
Stole the show. Every single time he was on, stole the show.
Oh, yeah.
Appeared with Adam West and Burt Ward, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Van Johnson and Bruce Lee did a cameo on the 60s Batman.
Was that Van Johnson? Or
as Green Hornet and... as Green Hornet and Kato against a Roger C. Carmel Captain or Colonel Gum.
Can we talk about the Kato sins for a second? Because I have a logistical question about the sins in this.
Okay.
So we all saw the movie. Shazam's power breaks down. He gets the eye, sticks it in it. All the sins break out, and they all get sucked into Mark Strong's eye, which I'm pretty sure is just autobiographical. And then he goes on his rampage, and the scene where Shazam, they realize that they've got to, while the sins are out of him, they can take him to task, right?
Yeah.
He's fighting, I think it's Envy on the roof.
Yes, Envy is the only one that's left inside him.
Because what happens is, how does it get back into him? Because you never see it, do you?
Oh, no, actually, you do see Envy reconstitute itself.
Okay.
After getting lightning bolted?
Yes. He reconstitutes himself, but I didn't think I saw him go back in. But
you see him sort of effervesce back into a cloud, and apparently Envy has a really good internal GPS.
Right.
Because it did find his... And it like zeroes in on its brotherhood there. You know, they're like the Corsican brothers. I don't even know what that means, but
that was a Cheech and Chong reference, I think. Was it a Cheech? No, what was the Cheech and Chong
movie? There
was a
Cheech and Chong movie of the Corsican brothers, but I believe that the Corsican brothers predate the birth of Cheech and or Chong.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
It does it really, or, you know, doesn't it? That's
Corsican brothers. Oh my God, Alexandre Dumas.
Yeah, I know. I'm just being
created them. So when he wasn't making Musketeers, he was making Corsican Brothers.
I don't know if he made Musketeers.
I wish they would come, and they've done this in some aspects.
Or was but I? When I think was sure enough.
At junior high, we had to read mythology, Blue Book, and all about the Greek and Roman gods and stuff. They'd make a good movie out of some of those stories.
Well, they did back in the 80s. It was called Clash of the Titans, and then they ruined it in the 2000s. Listen, and called Clash of the Titans.
There was one thing that I absolutely remember about Bullfinch's mythology. It was Bibbo the Mechanical Owl in every single story about Perseus. So,
that's the artistic license.
So what?
I think Aeschylus would forgive that.
Where did we land with this movie? I know that we talked about, you know, this being second to Wonder Woman. I kind of agree with that sentiment. Like, I thought this movie was really good, but Wonder Woman I felt carried more weight. And I think this was a good, fun movie, which is something that DC needs in their roster, is something fun. I think it would be a lot of fun to see Captain Marvel interact with a Batman or a Wonder Woman or a Superman.
Oh, yeah,
more so than just school lunch with we don't know who our new Superman is.
Well, and remember, they're not doing a shared universe anymore, so they're not beholden to very much of anything. So I think they have a real opportunity, whoever they decide Superman is, just to bring him in and be like, Superman's here, and then that's all you have to do. Like,
or, you know, technically, if they're not doing a shared universe, they could each individual movie could have cast its own Superman.
Right. I don't think they'll do that. Well, I think they'll have all the
same. You know, with redoing Batman, if they would get Michael Keaton to do it again,
a very intelligent man, and I understand where Cole gets it now.
Yeah.
That's
the one I enjoyed more than any of them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he made
you're preaching to the choir, my friend.
We love us some Michael Keaton on this show, Dan.
On last week's Saturday Night Live, what was her name from Birdman that also played Mary Jane, Cole? I can't remember her name. Do you know who I'm talking about? His daughter?
Yeah.
Emma Stone. They were doing a sketch, and they had him in it. They had Keaton show up. So Keaton was on Saturday Night Live. And he said, he was Julian Assange for something dumb. You know, he had the beard and everything. And he says, want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Nice.
And the audience doesn't respond. And I got, Lacey will attest to me getting viscerally angry at the TV. Yeah, why don't you laugh? That was a great joke. Michael Keaton is the only Batman. Why are you doing this? Like, I got real upset.
Well, you know, Batman wasn't supposed to be happy about it.
That's right.
He was out avenging his parents' murder.
I think Michael Keaton's Batman would be a great
whatever they had to pay him to get him to come back and do that.
Because the world's almost exist.
That's
real Michael Keaton vibe from this. Now that you mention it, Keaton, but a real Tim, what's his name? Why can't I think of his name? Cole?
Tim Curry?
No, not Tim
Burton.
Yeah, I got a kind of Tim Burton-y vibe from this. Not so much in, like, the set design and the set dressing, but from, like, some of the writing and things like that. So, I think it would work. I'm just putting that out there in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
I like to get a thing going and get signatures and so forth to get him
Let's
to come back.
Let's petition Congress to get him back.
Let's start one of those, whatever
it takes.
Exactly. Well, I do want to say that Zachary Levi nailed it in this, in portraying a child in an adult's body.
Yes.
That was just brilliantly dead on. It was a combination of the script and the directing, but Levi understood what it was, and it didn't miss a beat. Billy Batson was the same if he was Billy Batson or he was Shazam.
Right.
That's right.
There was this same level of bombast and this sort of sense of, doing my own thing because I'm the bitter kid in the foster system whose mom disappeared on him. You have this combination of, you want to so hate his mom for abandoning him, and then she reveals the full level of why, and you're like, well, hell, now it's heartbreaking. How dare you?
Right.
I wanted to hate you for abandoning your child, and you make a case for it that makes perfect sense, and it's just like, how dare you? I think Captain Sparklefingers there needs to pay a visit to old Claude or whatever his name is there on the other side of the apartment door, straighten his ass out. Her husband or boyfriend or whoever was that yelling at her?
Yeah.
He needs to just drop by and say, oh, yeah, look, we need to have a little
talk. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it because it was that brought back memories.
That was what was so wonderful.
Wonder Woman I really enjoyed, and it had a great time frame and all that.
Well, you know what, Dad? 2020, Wonder Woman 1985 is coming out.
You're going to have to go back down to spring.
I had to go back down and see Wonder Woman with you.
Well, we need to wrap this up soon. So let's get some final thoughts. How about that?
How did you feel coming out of the theater after seeing a childhood?
I felt like it really brought back some memories of Captain Marvel, and the reason I kept buying those magazines, they were just good for a 7-8 year old kid,
or a 40, 50, 60, 70 year old kid either,
I wish I had some of the old comic books to read again because they were really.
We're gonna need to see if we can hook you up.
Right, let's do that.
Hey Kids Comics is gonna get you hooked up.
Okay, I love that. But they had the Wonder Woman on television and all, and it was kind of, it didn't do Wonder Woman justice, but they didn't have all the computer graphic stuff to show her, So it wasn't much more than the serial we used to watch in the 40s. You didn't have much to do other than comics and going to the Saturday movies during the Second World War. Plus the movies were one of a few places that were air conditioned.
That's how movies became popular. They had air conditioning.
They'd have a sign up on the marquee that said, air conditioning with icicles hanging off the
lure those kids in.
None of us had air conditioning at home, so we'd go down there to the movie and spend
two and a half hours
or whatever. I still remember coming out of the Texas Theater. I had about a 2-block walk to the bus line that take me home and walk against that evening sun and be hot as hell the time I got home. But we stayed in the movie as long as we could.
You have a feel like you were back in an air conditioned theater and enjoying a movie serial again. Well, that's
it was good. it was good. I really, really enjoyed it. I really did.
Well, I had more fun going to see that with you, so I'm so
glad.
You
know, and what not be a pun, but what I marvel at is why the movie makers don't do more of these, because they always make lots of money, you know. And,
there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And a lot of it is convincing the studio that a movie like this will make more money than a dark, dark Batman or Superman movie, you know? And thankfully we've done that.
We need things to make us feel good, you know?
Exactly.
Have a feel good. Because if you watch television news, it's bleak, you know? 300 people getting killed over in Sri Lanka.
Right. Boy, we need hope.
You know,
we need hope. And that's what things are supposed to be.
Yeah. I had a high school friend that was a preacher and went on a crusade to Sri Lanka back in the 70s, I guess it was. But,
yeah.
And it was a different place then.
Oh, I'm sure. A lot of places are different now. But that's why I think it's so important, is so much is different. There is still...
Oh, sure.
Wholesome. You can go to see this movie. You know, it had its, you know, adult themes in big air quotes.
Oh, yes.
But it was, you know, this movie and the Spider-Man that they made recently, and the next one's coming out pretty soon.
Sure.
Like, those are the movies that I feel like we need. We need to have fun again.
Right.
And exactly. I think this gave it to us, you know?
Or you could laugh at old Shazam.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, well, what do you think, man?
Well, I could not have been happier with it. You know, like Dad was saying, it's a little slow on the uptake to get you where you're going.
That's true.
But right. I think once you get there, and once you're you're almost allowed to forget that it took a while to get you there, and they really did need to kind of develop this Shazam. This Billy Batson, because Billy needs to start out as a bit of a jerk,
who's
bitter about his circumstances, and then, you know, in desperation, a near dead, just shy of getting Thanos'd wizard Shazam.
Right.
It's just like, you know, I've gone through about 150 kids. Let's just give you the power. And, you know, you get that sort of sense like this was the last ditch, the sins have all escaped, I got to do something, I got to have a champion. This kid's got some potential. Shazam's recognizing it, gives him the power, and then ultimately he comes through and makes it happen. And I absolutely, in closing, I just have to say I absolutely loved when he took the staff from Savannah, got all the other his family that he was rejecting to grab hold of the staff and say my name, and they all yelled Billy. That was brilliant.
That was funny. That was good.
Because they weren't there.
That was good.
On the Rock of Eternity.
That was a good movie.
To know what to yell. So, and Andy, you want to finish this out and we'll get it plugged up? And
sure. And, no, I loved it. I thought it was great. Like I said, you know, between this and Wonder Woman, and especially if they take some of the tonal cues for the upcoming movies from this, you know, the sun was out. And that's shocking, right? In a DC movie.
It wasn't like you were watching Seven.
Right? It wasn't washed in a red or a gray. The sun was out. The fights happened in broad daylight with the sun out. You know, there was a lot of... You know, I'm trying to think of another movie where the family at the end is alive.
I mean, and the thing about it is, the sun was out when Savannah was croaking his dad and his brother.
Yeah, like, it was a bright movie. It was a fun movie. It was a coming of age. It was the Spider-Man of the DC Universe, which is what Shazam and Captain Marvel should be.
That's right. Spider-Man, he stumbled into his situation.
Right.
Exactly.
And then did great things with it, you know.
Yeah, it's the reluctant hero.
It was good.
you know, coming of age story. Right. Mythologically, it's all over the place, and you know, it's a great fun. It's acted well. I don't think anybody was miscast. You know, I think everybody did a great job, and yeah, everybody should go see it. So with that being said, Cole, plug us up so we can get out of here and let everybody go to sleep.
Absolutely. Well, thank you everybody for joining. Dad, especially, thank you for being on.
You bet. I enjoy it anytime.
This is the third of my shows you have been on, and we're coming to you through the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com, and be sure and check out my aforementioned live podcast, first and third Sundays of every month on DallasOnAir.com. We have the Rancor Pit live from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, and on the third Sundays of every month preceding Rancor, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Isle of Toys, AISLE, where I challenge myself to bring on guests and talk about toys that sometimes I'm very familiar with. Sometimes I have like zero foreknowledge. So it's always a lot of fun. We just did the Pop Vinyl line of, I think, 600 billion toys now.
Yes.
That latest episode was amazing because I didn't know that much about them going in. And so be sure and check that out, DallasOnAir.com, on the first and third Sundays of every month. And first Sundays, of course, my co-host Eddie Medina with his wife Colleen with Figments, the Unexplained Mysteries podcast.
I'm going to say this now, and I don't think we're going to be able to say it enough. And Cole, if you would, please put this in the show notes. First of all, spoilers. Second of all, I'm going to tell you now that our next show is going to be spoiler heavy. We will post every day that our next show is going to be spoiler heavy, because we are going to do an Avengers episode next, and it is going to be spoiler heavy. So if you haven't seen it, maybe we won't. Our feelings won't be hurt if you don't listen until after you've seen it.
And it will be roughly one third the length of Avengers Endgame.
It's going to be 4 hours long. That was my joke, because it is 3 hours and 1 minute long. You can find us at HK Comic Show on your Facebooks and your Instagrams and your Twitters. June 21st and 22nd, Geek Fest. Almost forgot. Kelly would have killed me.
Absolutely.
Up here at the Boonshop Museum of Discovery. Friday night is Geek Prom. That's the adult night. We're going to be there running game shows, hosting, doing contests. And then Saturday, fun for the whole family, runs from like 10 o'clock to 6 o'clock. Everything you could possibly do. More is getting added every day because Kelly is a machine. And she's got the coal. I don't know whether Cole's got the her or she's got the coal, but one of the two of them, these ideas just keep coming. And I'm much like Alcon. I'm just along for the ride. I'm like, yes, we can do that. No, we can't do that. That's my job. But yes, 21st and 22nd of June, please come. It's for a good cause, and it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. I can't reveal what we're doing, but I can tell you that outside of Alcon, you might not have seen anything like it. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. And if you happen to be catching this on Friday or Saturday, April 28th, I will be at the Texas Comic and Toy Show that is 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Courtyard Marriott at the Highlands in Arlington, Texas, selling all kinds of cool Marvel Legends and Star Wars Black Series and lots of neat stuff among several other vendors. So be sure and come out and check that out. Admission is $3, and there's a lot of great stuff for sale out there.
Heck yeah. And like we said, next week is Avengers. So prepare to be spoiled if you listen to the show, because I'm pretty sure we're not going to be able to shut up about it. So until next week, say goodbye, gentlemen.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
And thank you again, Dad, for joining us on this show and classing up the joint. We appreciate it.
Yes,
and as Porky Pig would say, night.
Nice.
Yeah, we're leaving on that.